Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of February 2020. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets and this morning's report, which dropped the season's average cash price for soybeans by 25 cents with Wayne Nelson. He's from L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from here on campus, will join us to discuss the ARC-IC program and some strategies that those of you who had full FSA farms, 100%, and prevent plant last year and what that'll mean for ARC-IC, ARC County, PLC, for corn, soybeans, and wheat, and that whole decision process for the rest of you as well has to be made by the 16th day of March, by the way. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. By the way, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org and get your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook. A couple of things. We confirmed just this week that Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS, will join us to discuss the reports and how farmers are involved, and you can ask him questions because he'll be up front. Gary Schnitke, of course, will be there if you've got more questions. This is on the third day of March about that ARC PLC decision, crop insurance too, and we'll have 16 analysts on hand to talk about the commodity market. You can buy your tickets online at willag.org, willag.org. That $30 cost includes the Beef House Roland coffee in the morning and a Beef House lunch. You can't beat that one. So sign up today, willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, March corn today down 2 cents, $3.79¾ on its settlement price. The May at $3.84¼, 2¼ lower. July down 2½ at $3.88¼. Next year's December at $3.92, down $0.01½. March soybeans up ½ at $8.84¾. May at $8.97¼ unchanged. July $9.10¼ unchanged. And November beans at $9.19¼ unchanged. The bean oil at $30.72, a dime higher. The bean meal at $2.90.80, down 60 cents. Wheat futures, soft red July, 7¾ lower at $5.44¾. The hard red at $4.81, down 4¼ cents. Live cattle futures, April contract, $1.50 lower at $1.17.17½. Feeders in the March, down $1.02½ at $1.34.67½. And lean hogs at $56.12½, 7½ cents lower. Crude oil down 20. Rather up 25 cents. Ethanol futures about unchanged. Heating oil, $0.01½ higher. That's diesel fuel. Gasoline on the wholesale price just about unchanged. And natural gas up 0.3¢. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 18 points lower. The U.S. dollar down 0.114. And the gold futures, $8.10 lower on the day. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what happened in the commodity markets and to discuss this morning's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report. There is an old fable in the trade business, Wayne, that the February report tends to be a yawner. That was not the expectation today, but kind of looks like that's what happened, eh?
It held true. I'll tell you, you know, there was this had the most hype for nothing I've seen in a long time. This is sort of like what's in Al Capone's vault, but you know, there wasn't much to be found and there wasn't much told to us today. And there really wasn't the implementation of the phase one deal here in what we saw today in any of the news.
Yeah. So what did you see in the change in the numbers for the day, either corn or soybeans?
Well, you know, I thought the biggest changes were probably in Argentina and Brazil, Todd, where they, you know, continue to raise those. But, you know, as far as the ending stocks, you know, they stayed the same on corn. We did drop a little bit in the wheat and the beans. We took the 50 million off, but then at the end, when we look at the prices, they took 25 cents off the average price on the commodity that we dropped the carryout. So I guess that's just a little bit different from what we were expecting when we looked at things. But all in all, pretty much of a ho-hum day with still looking more at coronavirus than we are the government report.
Yeah, so they did raise, in fact, exports for soybeans by 50 million bushels. But as you suggested, there were no changes in the ending stocks by the time we got to the end of that. Well, there were. They were down 50 million bushels, but they were down that 50 million bushels in the ending stocks, but 25 cents lower on the cash price of soybeans. They made note that that was based on what already had happened in the marketplace. So I guess a lot of soybeans must have been marketed in the month of January.
Well, you know, there was some awfully good basis prices over here early and in a lot of places around, and a lot of beans did move at that point in time. And I think that, well, number one, a lot of corn was coming in late, and a lot of guys moved a lot of beans to make room for some of the corn that they had because they didn't want to haul it to town with the high moisture discounts.
I've been trying to think about, speaking of corn and basis, what happens with all those basis contracts and how that is implemented in the futures market. Do we have any idea if it really has much of an impact because there's corn that's already been marketed through the channels?
Well, that, but there also is, it comes down to the last days and when the farmers need to roll them or they need to price like that. So if the grain merchandisers have been rehedging those as to their ownership as for pricing, this is why, you know, a lot of those will see some sales at the end of the month for the farmers pricing or rolling into the next month with their hedges.
Anything else that we need to look at as far as you're concerned? The coronavirus still is a big problem. I take it the world is trying to figure out what this means to GDP and commodities moving across the planet.
I think everybody's keeping a very close eye and seeing how many people show up to work in China or whether we get things back on or whether they start unloading boats or whatever. Now, we have to remember that a lot of the stuff with this phase one wasn't really wasn't supposed to go into effect until basically Friday here, and I think Friday or Saturday. And we're going to look very closely to see if some new stuff starts happening then, if we take knock the tariffs down or some TRQs that that we can get something going here like that. And we're hoping that maybe by the end of the week or first of the week, we can start to see maybe a little bit of business going into China on that. And that could help our markets a little bit. But for today, you know, no good news out of this report.
Now, that should give us some time before we get to the all-day ag outlook from the 15th, which is implementation day for phase one, to get to some idea of whether there will be any movement. I suppose that could make our March 3rd event over at the Beef House kind of fun.
Well, we hope it's fun, and we hope that we see this activity from China, and we hope to see an uptick to talk about, or at least the promise of some business to happen. So we can give some positive news that day, Todd. It's a lot more fun if we can be positive.
It always is. Oh, and hey, I don't know whether I have told you or whether you heard yet, but Lance Honig from USDA NASS, he's the chief of the crops branch, is going to come in. He's responsible on the NASS side for counting acreage and coming up with acres along with the yield. So that'll be interesting for the day, and everybody will be able to ask him questions too.
That will be something new and different. He'll be there talking right direct to the farmers, and I think some of their questions are going to be pretty pointed, and it'll be fun to hear how he answers them. And maybe, you know, I mean, along the way, maybe he'll give all of us, and the farmer included, some better understanding to how they think.
I bet he will. Hey, thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you again in a week.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news. Yesterday, the Trump administration rolled out its brand new budget. It's said to be, of course, dead on arrival, but it does have some interesting things in it. The president's fiscal year 2021 budget request to Congress cuts USDA spending by 8%, but boosts some rural funding. The president's $4.8 trillion spending plan, like earlier budget request, is more a starting point than a politically realistic plan. And this one cuts USDA's discretionary spending by $1.9 billion to $21.8 billion, which is 8% below the current levels. It also shreds last year's two-year budget deal. Cuts to Medicaid, EPA, and other domestic agencies and programs are all non-starters, as are reported farm subsidy cuts and renewed USDA food stamp cuts that replace some cash payments with food shipments. But there's also a reported $25 billion Revitalizing Rural America program, including grants for broadband internet access. And that's an issue that Mr. Trump highlighted in his State of the Union speech.
I'm also committed to ensuring that every citizen can have access to high-speed internet, including and especially in rural America.
The president last year proposed cuts to broadband, ag research, and staffing at FSA offices and in rural development. American Farm Bureau Federation's R.J. Carney says the bottom line again is getting certainty for the next fiscal year.
We would like to have certainty with regards to a fiscal year appropriations bill that could pass both chambers and get a signature through the White House before the September 30th deadline, so we can avoid having another continuing resolution, which has become all too accustomed here in Washington, D.C.
Another stumbling block is likely to be the policy writers the opposition House Democrats will try to impose. AFBF opposed a failed House policy rider last year that would have required a study of data USDA uses to approve faster pork slaughter line speeds. It took no position on another failed rider to defund relocating two USDA agencies to the Kansas City region. We're joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on campus. He's written another article for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can see it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This time around, it is targeting ARC-IC and strategies for use. Of course, producers will need by the 16th day of March to make their ARC and PLC decision. And some of them who have had prevent plant, I'm going to assume this is the way this works, in the past year may want to consider ARC-IC as an option, at least for corn.
Yeah, so ARC-IC, you have to enroll the entire Farm Service Agency farm in ARC-IC, and then it will be based on farm yields. It will be blended across the farm yields. We see two places where this fits in this time around. And again, we're sitting here signing up for the 2019 program and no 2019 yields. So we can pretty accurately estimate ARC-IC payments for farms. The only thing we really don't know is market year average prices, and we have pretty good estimates of those anyway. But so we can estimate whether ARC-IC is going to make a payment. There's two situations where it will make a payment. One is when the entire FSA farm, and it's key that the entire FSA farm be prevent plant. If any part of that farm is planted to a crop, the crop that's planted determines the revenue. So if you had a corn soybean farm or a corn soybean FSA, it took prevent plant on corn, planted the soybeans, it will be the soybeans that determine the payment. So if you have an entire prevent plant farm, though, you'll be the payment on that in central Illinois will be $40-$50 an acre. So that's pretty significant and something that you probably should take. The other area is if you have an FSA farm with low yields. And a good gauge of this is if you got a revenue payment on crop insurance. So if you took an RP policy and got some RP payments, for not because of prevent plant, but just because of our revenue losses, that farm is a candidate for ARC-IC. So that they will make ARC-IC payments as well. So those two farms will be the two that people should consider enrolling in ARC-IC.
And the reason here is because you have enough information from the 2019 crop year that you can calculate our county PLC and ARC-IC payments. And because this is a two-year enrollment this past year and the marketing year we're going into or the planting season we're about to go into, you're just thinking probably there won't be payments. And the ARC-IC is just big enough to make it work.
Yeah, so 2019, you would say for PLC, there will not be a PLC payment for corn or soybeans. Market year average price estimates are well above the effective reference prices. For wheat, if we have wheat base, there will be PLC payments, and they'll be pretty significant. In this area of the world, there probably will not be ARC County payments for corn or soybeans, but there will be some counties that get ARC county soybean payments, and they'll likely be in the northern and southern parts of the state. This area, central Illinois, probably has had too good of yields to have ARC County payments. We will actually know pretty closely whether a county will be getting an ARC County payment when NASS releases their yields next Thursday, and we'll do the calculations. Those will not be the yields RMA uses, but they'll be pretty close. So we'll estimate what payments will be using NASS yields, and then people can see whether ARC County will pay. And there will be some counties in this state where ARC County will pay, particularly for soybeans.
What's your best estimate at this time? And I suppose it might change, not likely to, but could change next week with the release of those county yields. But when they go in to sign up, what generally are producers signing up for?
So if you don't have an ARC IC payment, and you can calculate that, we have a little calculator that can calculate that. We would suggest signing up for PLC for corn. We would lean towards ARC County for soybeans because it's really hard to trigger a PLC payment. You have to have a price below $8.40, which hasn't happened in the past. That could happen, but it's not likely. And PLC for wheat. So, right now, you would say ARC IC if you have a FSA farm, that'll trigger payment. If that isn't the case, corn enroll in PLC, soybeans lean towards ARC County, and wheat PLC.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read his pennings on the Farm Doc Daily website most Tuesdays. On this Tuesday, let's check the weather forecast on days here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Let's begin in the United States. I think it's going to get colder at least for a couple of days here. Can you tell me about that in my part of the world and then other expectations?
Yes, you are correct. It's about ready to get colder again for many areas of the Midwest and Corn Belt. Going to see a little bit of snow come into the area again. This is going to be especially true in the northwest areas of the Corn Belt with another wave coming out of the Rockies and moving on through. Now, we expect that it's going to stay a little bit colder, a little more wintry and unsettled probably through the weekend and into the start of next week. About another 7 to 10 days of it generally being colder and more wintry before we see the end of February maybe bringing some moderating temperatures. I think the last week of February, we'll see a little bit of a warm-up coast to coast. But in the meantime, winter weather is here to stay for a bit.
And then in South America, the United States Department of Agriculture said Brazil's got a really good crop coming on and upped the size of that crop by a couple million metric tons today, though it left the Argentine crop the same. You have an assessment from either of those nations?
Yeah, it's been a pretty decent growing season down there in terms of the way the weather's been. We haven't had any really large areas of really dry, hot conditions. Now, there's been pockets along the northeastern edges of some of the key growing areas of Brazil. Plants are a little stressed due to dryness, but overall, the pattern's been favorable, and it will be here for another week to 10 days in both Brazil and some of the key growing areas of Argentina. So it looks like they're headed towards the tail end of their season with a continuation of favorable conditions.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and joined us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the weather forecast. In an unusual move, the United States Department of Agriculture just released in the last 3 minutes an update of the reasons why the numbers from the Phase 1 trade deal didn't, well, actually really kind of did show up in today's WASD, or World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates Report. Here's Gary Crawford.
Some people were expecting Tuesday's USDA supply and demand forecasts to show big changes in crop export prospects because of the U.S.-China trade deal. But instead,
by and large, not a lot of changes.
USDA's chief economist Rob Johansson says there are three reasons why the China deal did not cause big increases in USDA crop export forecasts. First reason,
an increase in exports to China oftentimes will come from a decrease in exports to another part of the globe.
And the USDA report only shows net exports, not sales to any one country. Second, the USDA report makes forecasts on a marketing year basis for crops. And the marketing year ends this summer, but the China purchase commitments were made on a calendar year basis.
So any changes in China purchases could occur now, could it occur in October or November when we're harvesting our crop.
And that's when prices for most crops would be lower, chances of sales higher. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now quickly to the agricultural energy sector. Stephen Platt joins us. He's with Archer Financial Services. Thanks, Stephen, for being here again this month. We appreciate you taking the time with me. Why don't you recap what's happened over the last month as it relates to agricultural energies?
This market's really shown a weak trend pretty much over the past month, reflecting the impact of the coronavirus, along with, I think, the underlying fundamentals, which we've been talking about here even prior to its evidence in China. And its potential impact on demand. We had already seen problems, I think, in terms of Chinese demand even before the virus hit. You've seen the impact from the coronavirus even more pronounced. We've seen the major state-owned oil companies reduce their runs by 10%. Independent refiners have cut runs as much as 50%. The global impact is yet to be determined, particularly on the demand side in the rest of Asia. And so you still have a lot of uncertainty in this market in terms of the underlying supply-demand side. The global situation will likely remain a central focus. Reports that crude flows from the U.S. to Europe are set to increase as shipments are basically changed from Chinese origin or destinations to Europe, are going to compete with other crudes, and certainly could lead to backups in the U.S. In terms of inventories. I think that is going to be a key question. Certainly the DOE report is a factor to watch. Another factor is certainly the OPEC position. Russia has indicated they want to take time to assess whether the market needs a further cut. OPEC technical committee did indicate they wanted to reduce production another 600,000. But as I said, the Russians are balking at such a cut. That is certainly a key consideration. And it also points to the fact that there is growing concern that these cuts that OPEC has made has benefited the U.S. and other producers outside of OPEC, which is certainly a factor to consider. They might certainly back off in terms of making further cuts if, in fact, they continue to see pressure on their prices.
Hey, thanks so much, Stephen. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services from Chicago, Illinois. Helped us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget, you can find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. Right there off the website, the Opening Market Report, Mid-Morning, Midday Report, and the Closing Market Report along with Commodity Week. You can find all of those programs, or a couple of them at least, three of them, in fact. His podcast in Stitcher, SoundCloud, the NPR One app, Spotify, Google Play, and Apple Podcast. And don't forget to buy your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. They're just $30 at willag.org.